Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, August the 31st, and it's time for the Friday Week in Review, when we talk with two guests from different perspectives about the top news stories of the week. And there is a lot to talk about today, and we'll get right to it with Rick Berg, former appointee of the Thompson administration, currently a freelance writer and contributing columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal and the Capital Times, and a board member of Wisconsin Common Cause. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Ed Garvey is also with a senior partner at the law firm of McGarvey, McNeil, and McGilvery, also a former Democratic candidate for governor and Senate, currently the editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Joy.
And the organizer of BobFest, which I heard is coming up pretty soon.
BobFest next Saturday. So we're and it's going to be a day just like this. Mid-70s, blue sky with just a little bit of breeze to cool the body, but not the ardor of the participants.
I'm sure it'll be a good time. I'll be at a birthday bash for one of my girlfriends, so I'm sorry I'm going to have to miss it.
You cannot tell me that.
I was there last year.
Yeah, I know.
So I made an appearance with Blaska, Dave Blaska, last year. We had a good time there, Ed.
But he had bumper stickers all over him. I don't think you did.
No, I didn't. That's Dave's style, not mine. And they weren't the right bumper. Well, they were the right bumper stickers, not your style, though.
We get a lot of Republicans and independents and Green Party and Democrats and all sorts
It's
of
good
people.
To see how the other half lives.
It is. It's a nice opportunity for you to come view what we do.
Well, that's nice. A variety of perspectives at BobFest, as we hope to hear today. Sounds like it's going to be a nice day. Larry Craig of Idaho has not been having a good day.
Who?
Good days lately. Let's listen to U.S. Senator Larry Craig from his news conference on Wednesday.
While I was not involved in any inappropriate conduct at the Minneapolis airport or anywhere else, I chose to plead guilty to a lesser charge in hopes of making it go away.
Well, it did not go away, did it, Ed Garvey?
Well, sometimes you just almost have to laugh. I mean, it's the reaction from the Republican senators, knowing it's a safe seat, saying, please leave now so we can appoint a Republican to take your place, to a guy, one of these law and order gay bashers who says, I didn't do anything inappropriate and I pled guilty just to make it go away. I mean, for heaven's sakes, I think he's done.
Yeah. Do you think he's done, Rick?
Yeah, he's done, unfortunately. When Ed was talking about appointing somebody, I'm sure they would like to appoint another Republican, one who understands what bathrooms are for. And apparently Larry Craig seems to have a problem understanding what that's all about. But I never knew traveling could be so fun. There's a whole part of traveling that I knew nothing about until this story broke. But yeah, he's politically cooked. But the interesting thing is that the Republicans have their scandals. The Democrats have more scandals. I mean, when it comes to sex scandals.
Oh, no, wait a second.
Oh, yeah, we could run the list.
No, we're not. Fairness is not what we're after here.
I know. Fairness, sort of like the legal system. Fairness is not what it's after. But the fact of the matter is that, when Republicans get caught in these things, they are immediately hounded out of office by the mainstream media. I was watching NBC or something a couple nights ago, and the first three stories were about Larry Craig. Now it's an interesting story, and Larry Craig did a boneheaded thing in the Minneapolis airport, and I think he deserves to be forced out of office for it. So let me put that out there and say that quite clearly, because I think it is conduct unbecoming a United States senator. But there have been plenty of Democratic members of Congress, Senate, and the House that have engaged in similarly embarrassing episodes, and we don't hound them out of office. So I think there is a bit of a double standard here at play in Washington. So,
but isn't it different if you're a family values guy who votes anti-gay marriage?
I don't think it really is. I think it's a matter of the type of conduct we expect from people in high public office. I really don't, Joy. I don't think the style of politics or your opinions on certain issues should be the controlling factor. When you occupy a position of high trust in the federal government through elective office, I think you are obligated to rise to a different level of conduct than most people are expected to meet. And so, no, I would disagree.
Yeah. What about
well,
you, Ed?
I think, the absurdity of it is just shouts out. We forgive Abu Ghraib. we forgive the bombing of Iraq and the millions of lives that have been disrupted. We forgive things. We don't hound people out of office for lying and cooking up the intelligence. Somebody has a personal problem. That becomes the story of the day, the week, or whatever, and the piranhas circle around until they get the body.
Well,
it seems to me that this is just a diversion from some pretty serious issues. I don't care what happens to Larry Craig, to be honest with you. I do care about getting our troops out of Iraq.
Yeah, well, the GOP thinks that Larry Craig's going to hurt Republicans in 2008, so that's why...
Well, for heaven's sakes. I mean, isn't that, asinine? I mean, here is somebody who is supposedly caught in the bathroom of an airport soliciting sex or whatever he was doing, that somehow or other the reaction is not what happened to him, what the system is, but this might hurt our chance of reelection. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous, but it's true. I mean, you saw, Ed, last fall how Mark Foley became a drag around the Republican chances in Congress, and I think there's obviously the same sort of concern with Larry Craig. And so, and the Democrats are very good at exploiting these sorts of issues, despite problems.
Well, they don't have to because, as Joy mentioned, here you have somebody who's a gay basher, who is holier than thou, and he may well be engaged in the very conduct that he is condemning. It seems to me that that's what the American people object to. Is don't wear your religion on your sleeve if you're not religious. Don't tell us that you're anti-gay if you're gay. I mean, we don't care about whether you're gay or you're straight or you're anything else. I agree with Barry Goldwater on that issue.
Well, I know, but at the same time, I mean, for instance, Barney Frank, I mean, there was essentially a brothel operation being run out of his Washington home back in the 80s. I mean, and he knew about it. So what are we supposed to infer? What are we supposed to infer from that? That that he's okay with running, sex for sale operations out of his house, and so therefore he's not a political hypocrite, he should stay in Congress?
He doesn't want a constitutional amendment about brothels. Craig is just one of these people that you just kind of feel fingernails on the blackboard.
You got Gary Studs, who had sex with an underage intern in Congress.
Well,
elected six additional terms.
This is
after
a family program here. Don't
those are Democrats, Ed, and they went on to have fine careers in Congress. But Larry Craig's got to go right now, and I think Larry Craig should go. But I think when those other people made those mistakes, they should have gone too.
Well,
I mean, we have some standards for members of Congress?
Well, let's talk about someone else.
Apparently
who,
not.
Who is going. Here's Alberto Gonzalez from his news conference earlier this week.
I often remind our fellow citizens that we live in the greatest country in the world and that I have lived the American dream. Even my worst days as Attorney General have been better than my father's best days. Public service is honorable and noble. And I am profoundly grateful to President Bush for his friendship and for the many opportunities he has given me to serve the American people. Thank you, and God bless America.
Why are you leaving?
Why are you leaving?
Why don't you deny your resignation on Sunday to the New York Times?
So Alberto Gonzalez never really said why he was leaving. President Bush said he reluctantly accepted the resignation and said that his friend's name was dragged through the mud, Ed Garvey.
Or as Chuck Grassley said, drugged through the mud, which I thought was kind of a unique perspective. They drugged him and then they
pulled him through the mud.
But, they have to leave with God bless America. I mean, here's a guy who's destroyed the reputation of the Justice Department, destroyed the morale, lied under oath, misplaced the Constitution, went to the hospital bed of John Ashcroft to convince him to sign a document that would allow them to spy on Americans without permission. I mean, this guy is a total disgrace. And for him to have had to resign rather than the Bush administration firing him, I think says more about the Bush administration than anything I could add.
I don't know if he was a total disgrace. I think he was a bad manager, and for that he paid a very high price. And I think he probably didn't have the right sort of political instincts for the job. I mean, they pretty much hung him on this issue of the U.S. attorneys being fired, the eight U.S. attorneys. And the president has the right to fire U.S. attorneys anytime the president wants to fire U.S. attorneys.
Don't go down that road.
Well, but it's true. They can. And Clinton,
well, sure they can, but they don't.
Can. Well, the Clinton fired all of them when he took office.
Well, they all do that when they come into office.
But the fact of the matter is they serve at the pleasure of the president. And if the president doesn't like the job somebody is doing, or if you're a U.S. attorney and he doesn't like the tie you're wearing, you can be fired.
Now, what are the odds of me being a U.S. attorney?
Well, what are the odds of you wearing a tie? that's what I want to know.
So. Those odds are much better.
Well, it says here the Justice Department says it is investigating whether Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez lied or otherwise misled Congress last month in sworn testimony about the Bush administration's domestic terrorist spying program. Details of the inquiry by the Justice Department were released 3 days after Gonzalez abruptly announced he was stepping down. So anything to do with it, you think, Ed?
Well, there's no question. When you have Arlen Specter, who rarely holds a position for more than a day, saying that he's a liar, and you had the Republicans essentially saying you've got to leave, he had no support at all except for the president. And so, under circumstances like this where they think he perjured himself, I would think they probably wanted to get him out of office.
Ed, could we do a mid-season trade? I'd like to trade Arlen Specter for Joe Lieberman. Could we do that? Could we take care of that here this morning?
Absolutely.
You used to be a big shot in the NFL union thing. I know it's not football, but could we do a player trade? Because I'd much rather have Joe Lieberman on the Republican side than Arlen Specter.
He is on your side. I think it'd be tempting.
And Arlen's on your side, so can't we just switch the labels?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, speaking of people, the comings and goings in Washington, today is Karl Rove's last day on the job. The top White House political strategist said he is leaving to spend more time with his family. Want to wish him well, Ed Garvey?
Well, I want to extend my sympathies to the family. they've had a respite for a while. It's about to end. He's coming home. Look out, kids. Here he comes. He's in the driveway. Go out the back.
So Karl Rove get a bad rap, you think, Rick Berg?
Well, anyone who's caught dancing the way he was dancing on that YouTube clip deserves to be run out of Washington, I think, for bad dancing alone. But, Karl Rove, bright guy, very smart politically. I mean, I know the Democrats hate him, and they hate him primarily because he's been so effective. And he managed to get George Bush elected twice to the presidency, and that, of course, doesn't sit well with the Democrats. So they're happy to see him go. They'll continue to beat up on him. They'll subpoena him. They'll try to get him to testify before Congress. And, Karl Rove will still be around Washington, I'm sure. But very bright man who's been a great asset to the president. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I'm not so sure that I buy everything that Karl Rove was selling, but he was effective at what he did.
Well, I think that he helped to destroy the Bush administration, and historians will look back and say that this was an absolute the worst presidency in the history of the country, and I think Karl Rove played a major role. He is the follower of Lee Atwater, and really the destruction of our politics of civility. I mean, where we used to be able to run for office and be nice to one another, disagree on policy. Now it's just vicious attack, vicious attack, vicious attack, which I think fits into the Larry Craig stuff. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, now it's your turn. But I think that Karl Rove is will go down in history as even worse than Lee Atwater.
Well, I would share the concern you have over the politics of civility, but I think the erosion and the destruction of that was underway long before George Bush ever made it to Washington. And unfortunately, it's a bipartisan problem. So it isn't just George Bush and Karl Rove who invented the kind of cruel, crude politics that we see now being played at the state and national
level. So you're
accusing
Rupert Murdoch of being part of this in Fox News?
No. Okay. Not Rupert. But Clintons were pretty good at it, too, in the 90s. So.
No.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Let me remind listeners, this is the Friday Week in Review. We are talking with Rick Berg and Ed Garvey, and with you, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890, or send an email with your question or observation from something in the news this week to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Well, we're talking a lot about all the folks leaving Washington with the resignations of Gonzalez and Karl Rove and the possible resignation of Larry Craig. Someone is going to be officially entering the presidential race. We'll talk about that after this break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, talking with her guest about the real effect of economic growth on the majority. They'll talk about a recent Census Bureau report that the median household income rose last year, but Milwaukee had the nation's eighth highest poverty rate. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. By the way, on Monday, Labor Day, during this hour, I will welcome in the AFL-CIO's David Newby to talk about labor issues and issues affecting working people. We have been doing this program every Labor Day for the past many, many years, and will again on Monday, Labor Day, after 8 o'clock. Right now, it's the Friday Week in Review. Rick Berg, former appointee of the Thompson administration, a current board member of Wisconsin Common Cause, and Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil & McGilvery, and editor and publisher of FightingBob.com, are two guests for this Friday's Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Well, it hit the news late yesterday that former Senator Fred Thompson, Republican Tennessee, will make it official next week and announce he's going to run for president. Is it too late, Rick Berg?
No, it's not too late at all, and a lot of people have been waiting for Fred Thompson to get in this race, and I think, if anything, it might have been better for him if he'd gotten in earlier rather than later. But the fact of the matter is, when he does announce next week, he will become one of the top three or four candidates in the field, and I think he'll add a considerable amount to the debate and the discussion. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. As you know, and anyone who's followed this, there's been a concern among the Republican field in terms of a lot of people in the party looking for a conservative in the Reagan mold, someone who's reliably conservative on social issues and fiscal issues, and Fred certainly seems to fit the bill. So he becomes a major player. He will become a major player as soon as he announces. And the dynamic of the race will change considerably. For that matter, Newt Gingrich may yet get in, too. I don't think Newt's going to be the nominee of the party, and I am sure Ed wouldn't want to see that either, and he's not going to be elected president. But Newt Gingrich is a bright guy, and he could add a lot to the Republican debate as we move through the presidential primary season. So you might see another addition after Fred Thompson, but the race is going to change considerably, and I think you'll in the not-too-distant future, see some of the other also-rans dropping out of the field.
Mm-hmm. Ed?
Well, we've been busy trying to kill the rumor that Fred Thompson will announce at Bob Fest.
Yeah, I had encouraged him to do that because I thought that would be a nice
or
twist.
Newt Gingrich. So if Fred Thompson is at Bob Fest, we'll give him a good introduction, and I think it would be a test of his ability to appeal to a broader audience. You know, the comments about Fred Thompson that he may be a great salesman for no-dos. I mean, he is not exactly a dynamic speaker, and, you know, he brings with him the Hollywood credentials. But I haven't seen anything yet. Tommy beat him in Iowa, so that gives you some idea, even though Fred wasn't on the ballot.
Really,
they could have voted for him.
They
knew he was a potential. So I don't think it's going to change much, but I do think it speaks to the weakness of the Republican slate of candidates. Somebody said that watching them in a debate looks like 10 guys at a country club waiting for their tea time, and that's about it. There hasn't been any excitement at all on the Republican side. They're all God-fearing, anti-gay, anti-abortion, you know, anti-government people who want to lead an institution that they want to destroy.
Yeah. What about what do you make of this, Rick Berg, about this big donor of Senator Clinton's campaign, Mr. Is it Sue or Who? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. This guy's in some trouble, and they're looking at whether he's you know, making donations in other people's names and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you've got sex scandals in Washington again. You've got funny money coming from the Far East. I thought for a moment there this week that the Clintons had just taken over Washington again. I mean, this is like a rerun, isn't it, of the 90s?
Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, well, it is. It's like it's like they've already taken over again. The Clinton soap opera has come back to town. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, and I think maybe Ed and I might actually sort of agree on this, but you see the same problem at the national level where you've got the Hillary Clinton campaign taking, I think, $200-some thousand in donations from this fellow or this family that lives in this little modest house near the San Francisco airport. Long story in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago about this. Very interesting story, and they're checking into it now. But it's more of this whoring after campaign cash that we've seen polluting not only the body politic at the national level, but also in the state of Wisconsin. And I think there's a problem. You know, once you get this much money flowing through the political process, you're going to have situations like this. They can't help but happen. And so I think this is just another manifestation of the problem that we have with money in politics. And as I say, maybe that's something Ed and I can agree on, but well, it's shameful, I think.
I was worried. We have Granny D coming in to Fighting Bob Fest and Mike McCabe to talk about campaign corruption. I was afraid that we had resolved all the problems and that they wouldn't have anything to talk about. So I was delighted with this story. $255,000 to Democratic candidates and to committees, and I think $23,000 to Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I mean, the fact is, if you're raising millions of dollars, people give you that money because they want something. They don't give it to you because you're good-looking. They don't give it to you because they're committed to your principles. I just don't know anybody who's got $100,000 to give to somebody because they like them. I do know the pharmaceuticals and the insurance industry and these people. And this guy, he has a stake here somewhere. We're not sure what it is, but he isn't giving that money because he's deeply committed to Hillary's position on Iran.
Right.
So we've got to have public financing. And here in Wisconsin, we've got a Supreme Court race coming up, and it's going to be another scandal. We've got Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce saying they're going to put as much as $4 million in to defeat Supreme Court Justice Lewis Butler. And if that happens, we might as well put a for sale sign up on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Much like we did on the governor's office.
Absolutely.
Already?
I mean,
any day now I expect to see several for sale signs coming up around the Capitol lawn.
Come on, the governor's on vacation. Be kind.
We'll talk about the state budget and other state issues in just a moment. But let me, before we move on to some callers who have other issues to bring up, ask you about the anniversary this week of Hurricane Katrina. A lot of the presidential candidates trekked through the Gulf Coast area, New Orleans, and President Bush as well. What's your report card, Ed Garvey, on how the government's doing in rebuilding, especially New Orleans?
Well, it's a disaster. I mean, you know, from day one, the administration demonstrated its incompetence. And I think that incompetence is probably the adjective that will describe this administration on everything from Iraq to Katrina. So, you know, they've tried to do things to make it look like things are a little bit better. But it's awful, and I think that the defeat of the Republicans in 2008, if it occurs, will be more because of Katrina than Iraq. So I do think that when John Edwards said if he were president, he would make this essentially, he'd almost move there in order to do something about the conditions. I don't think they're safe even now, so it's a terrible example of incompetence.
Well, I don't know if incompetence is going to be...
I agree with you, Ed.
I agree with everything you said, Ed. I don't think incompetence... I think history will be kinder to the Bush administration, perhaps, on some things than Ed Garvey is being here today.
Well, but, I imagine.
It couldn't help but be true. I understand that. New Orleans... I mean, the levees are being built and rebuilt in New Orleans. They're being reinforced. Time will tell. We'll have to wait for another major storm or hurricane to hit that area to see what impact it's had and whether or not what they've done will be successful. The pace of rebuilding the city has been slower, but I don't know if you can lay all of that blame at the federal government. I think the federal government has provided ample financial resources to that area to rebuild. And I think just like you saw before Katrina hit, and even during the storm, a lot of the problem in New Orleans and Louisiana comes back to the governor's office there and the mayor's office. And so,
but Rick, much more money went to Mississippi, where you have Haley Barbour, the former lobbyist and head of the Republican Party, and a disproportionate amount of money went to Mississippi as opposed to Louisiana, which was a blue state. And it seems to me that politics got in the way again, and I think that's Karl Rove, and maybe with his departure, things will change.
It could be. I don't know. I don't know how the dollars broke out between Mississippi and Louisiana. It would be hard for me to address that. But the fact of the matter is that the first thing I think that needed to be done in New Orleans is they needed to reconstruct the levees and to strengthen the levees. If you don't do that, there's probably not a lot of sense in throwing money into housing in those areas that would be prone to flooding. And so I think sequentially they've probably done the right thing. Let's first get the levee problem corrected. And that is not something that you can do overnight or in a week or in a month. It literally does take years. And the rebuilding of New Orleans is going to take a long, long time. And the pace may not necessarily be fast enough for the people that have suffered, that have been forced out of their homes, that can't move back into neighborhoods that they want to get back into. But I sort of understand it in the sense that this is a long-term process. And you know, we have, I think everyone agrees, it was one of the most major natural disasters ever to hit the United States. It's going to take some time. And there's going to be frustrations and anger and all that. But eventually New Orleans is going to be rebuilt. It'll be better than ever. And I think if you look 10 years down the road, that city is going to be in better shape than it ever was.
Oh, my.
Let's take some calls. Boyd in Milwaukee will change the subject for us. Hi, Boyd. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
Good morning, Ed, and good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
First off, just for my question, I have some bad news. I will not be able to make it to Fighting Bob Fest, but I'm certainly going to try for next year.
You can buy the DVD.
The best of Bob Fest.
I am there. I'm going to go online. I will get it. Actually, my question was, Joy had a very interesting guest on a couple days ago, and he argued very effectively that there still might be a chance that there might be some type of attack on Iran before the Bush administration leaves office. And I just want to get both of your viewpoints on that. Do you really think that there is a chance of that, or do you think it could just be a lot of smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, this was Bob Baer, or Robert Baer, former CIA officer, who wrote a piece for Time saying that his sources told him that this was, you know, within 6 months, a military strike, a targeted military strike.
I'm not kidding. I wake up every morning to public radio on my alarm radio, and the first thing I listen to is whether or not we bombed Iran. I think that Dick Cheney is absolutely committed to that idea, and the question is whether the military will let him do it. The article that gives me some hope was in The New Yorker the military is telling this administration they cannot bomb Iran because it would cut off our oil supply, and there would be no way to follow it up. So I think it's possible if Cheney and Bush think that the Democrats are going to win the presidency in 2008, go ahead and bomb Iran and let the Democrats, whoever wins, deal with the consequences. Mm-hmm. Scary.
Well, I usually wake up every morning to my chocolate lab licking my face.
Really?
I don't mean to as a slap at public radio, but that's usually the way my morning goes. The chocolate lab is getting me up. So,
but you didn't have to listen to public radio to hear this kind of concern out there.
If it's up to the Republicans in the assembly, there won't be any public radio to wake up to.
And my dog doesn't have any concerns except when can you feed me and when can you let me out, and sooner the better. But on the issue of Iran, I don't know if it's likely. I mean, it's a parlor game. Who knows? I'm not so sure the United States is interested in going down that road. And I've said before in this show that I wouldn't be surprised if there needed to be a surgical military strike in Iran if Israel wasn't involved some way in that play. But I thought it was also interesting that I think it was this last week when the new president of France suggested that perhaps military action would be appropriate in Iran. I guess things have changed in Paris.
Well, also, Hillary Clinton, when she appeared at the APEC conference, said that bombing Iran was still on the table. So we don't have a clarion call from the Democrats to stop this talk.
No, you don't. But I think what you have in all of this, whether it's the noise coming from the Bush administration or the French president or even Hillary Clinton, is a recognition that Iran poses a serious, serious problem to stability in the Middle East and perhaps even to the United States of America. Now, how we deal with that is going to be a matter of some debate and discussion.
But the instability is caused primarily by the United States of America, which is the problem. So bombing Iraq, think about it. I mean, bombing Iraq, where are we now? 5 years later, we're still in a quagmire. Hopefully, when this Petraeus report comes out, the Democrats will reject it and cut off the funding, but I don't think they will.
Well,
the same thing, they're so afraid of being called weak on terrorism that I think they would probably get in line and support the idea of bombing Iran. That's what scares
but
me.
But Iran, I'm not going to engage the Iraq thing, but just on Iran.
I wouldn't if I were you either.
Yeah, well, again, on Iran, I mean, Iran with nuclear weapons is a very scary thought. I mean, Iran is one of the primary state sponsors of terrorism in the Middle East. And I think that there are a lot of people, a lot of sensible, reasonable people who are concerned about what happens if Iran gets nuclear weapons. And if we're convinced that a military strike could do something to derail that goal, I think there are a lot of people that would be happy to see that occur.
I think a lot of reasonable people are upset that Pakistan, not exactly the model of stability, has nuclear weapons. I don't think people are happy with the fact that this administration is sending nuclear devices to India. I mean, the problem is that we have allowed nuclear proliferation, done nothing about it. Israel has the nuclear weapons, as you know. And so, and we've done nothing about the bringing about peace in Palestine and with the Israelis. So, I mean, we're creating the instability that says, okay, now what we have to do is bomb Iran because they might get nuclear weapons in the next 10 years.
Well,
it's crazy.
I agree with you, though, in terms, if we could vote someone off the nuclear island, I'd be happy to vote India and Pakistan
after
off.
The program, I'll tell you how to do it.
Okay,
Iran's president this week is warning a power vacuum is imminent in Iraq. He says that Iran is ready to help fill the gap. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said the political power of the occupiers is collapsing rapidly, referring to U.S. troops in Iraq.
But he made that statement before the new report that we're going to reform the Iraqi police. The United States Army is now saying that they're going to get rid of corruption and extremism within the police force. So
you don't think that's going to help, Ed?
No. I mean, it's ludicrous.
I think it's a little wishful thinking. I mean, that's what Iran would like to see happen. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the situation, I think, in Iraq, despite what Ed says, is actually improved, and I think there's plenty of evidence to point to it. People that have been over there, written about what's going on the ground, there is more stability, there's better security. So I think we're actually making progress in Iraq, and we may yet be able to succeed, with success being defined as bringing stability to the country and allowing the political process to sort of coalesce in Iraq.
I'll run that by Cindy Sheehan at BobFest.
Okay.
See what she thinks.
Well, she may have a different point of view.
She might have.
Yeah, and I know she's got broad foreign policy experience, so I'll be curious to hear her point of view.
Cindy Sheehan's your keynote speaker at BobFest.
Yes, she is. But we have several of them. We always like to have several keynotes.
How many mentions have we had of BobFest so far in the show?
This is an ongoing job.
BobFest marathon today.
I know. Anytime BobFest is coming up and Ed Garvey is on the air.
September what?
September 8th?
Right. Are you sure?
You forgot about September 7th at the Barrymore in Madison.
Right, at 7 o'clock with Jeremy Scahill, the author of Blackwater. This shows how we have privatized our war efforts.
Ed Garvey, one of our weekend reviewers this week, and also Rick Berg. And we welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review. We're talking with Rick Berg and Ed Garvey. One more call on some international stuff, and then we'll move on to state. Jeff in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Beautiful day. I think it's really clear that your guests are unable to look at the world as it is. Iran has been a victim of American aggression for most of the last 100 years, most especially with a war against Iraq in which Washington armed both sides and hundreds of thousands of Iranians and Iraqis were killed. The worst and most notable damage began with the removal of the freely elected government of Mossadegh back in the early 50s, and the reinstallation of the runaway Shah, who was a crazy person, essentially, and brought Savak, the secret police, and 30 years of terror. And it keeps going, and that neither of your guests talk about it merely shows the corruption of the Republicans and Democrats.
Well, Ed, are you corrupt?
Are you corrupt?
No, I gave it up for Lent 1 year, and I never went back to it. I condemn the CIA's overthrow of Mossadegh, and I think that Savak was a disaster. I did what I could at a young age to try to expose the atrocities of that regime. The United States has been doing this kind of thing for a long time. The next year, in 1954, they overthrew the government in Guatemala. There's still no stability there as a result of the efforts of the United States. So I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, we could argue about history. I mean, I don't know how many hours you'd have to spend on that, Joe. We could argue about history for a long, long time. And it seems to me also that Great Britain played a role in redrawing the map of the Middle East and creating Iraq.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the political problems we see today in Iraq, thank you, come from things that Great Britain did.
But fortunately, they're pulling out now.
Yeah, right. They're finally getting out. But you know, regardless of how we got to this point, and I will concede that the United States has made missteps along the way. Great Britain has made missteps, and we're still paying the price for all of that. I understand all of that. But the fact of the matter is we have to deal with the world as we find it today. And there is a regime in power in Iran, regardless of how they got there, what the course of history has been, that I do not want to have nuclear weapons. And I think most people in the civilized world would agree with that. And so the question is, what do we do about that? Not sit and argue about how history brought us to this point, but what do we do about where we are now? So yeah. I think that's the major issue.
Yeah, and we usually try to stick to the news this week, Jeff. Laverne in Monroe will turn our attention to some other issues. Hi, Laverne.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Great program.
Thanks.
I hope to get the state budget settled by Christmas, at least anyhow.
Is that Christmas of this year?
Christmas of this year. I'll be glad when the election comes. Because I'm going to ask some Republicans why they want to cut the state funding on public radio and public TV rather than raise the taxes on all companies and cigarettes.
I want to ask somebody that too, Rick Berg. I know you're not a member of the Republican Party or the legislature, but why do you think it singles out public broadcasting and wants to cut all state support for public broadcasting?
Well, I'm guessing because you don't often portray a view that Republicans are fond of. I'm just guessing here, and I could be wrong. I don't know. But
you are.
Well, I mean, but I don't have. See, I don't have a problem. There's a lot of different sources of political point of view in the media. You are one. There are many others that are very conservative. You've got talk radio in Madison and throughout the state. Many AM radio, much of which is conservative in nature. And there is a tradition in Wisconsin of supporting public television and public radio with public dollars. And I think that's a good thing. So I differ from some of my sort of brethren, I guess, in the legislature on that point. But the real problem is that we've got a state budget that now is, I mean, it's in gridlock. It's sort of like World War One and trench warfare, but without the mustard gas, isn't it, Ed? I mean, it reminds me, everyone's dug in, nobody wants to move, and you've got all this policy stuff in the budget. Now, there was a move, I think, last week by two Republicans, Senator Mike Ellis and Senator Rob Coles, to try to take a lot of the policy stuff out of the budget and deal with it separately, which I think is just an absolutely brilliant idea. And other people have talked about that over the years, but we don't seem to be able to get to that point. But I think if we could do that, it would certainly ease the passage of the state budget, which is really, you know, an appropriations budget.
Well,
but it's loaded up now with all this policy stuff, and we're still discovering things that are in, you know, the Senate Democratic version of the budget, the Assembly Republican version of the budget. I mean, it's a crazy process that we've created.
The problem is they're so out of touch. I mean, let's talk about public radio for a second. I mean, what I think these Assembly Republicans would like would be a mirror image of WTMJ in Milwaukee, which is right-wing talk all the time, or Clear Channel, which controls 1,300 radio stations across the country. They don't like the idea of some diversity. What we need is the fairness doctrine reenacted so that people would have an opportunity to hear differing views. The only chance you have, really, is now with public radio and public television. And while I think it's tends to be more conservative than I would like, it offers an opportunity for diversity. But these Assembly Republicans, I think, have lost their minds. I mean, the idea that we're the only state in the union that doesn't have a budget, and we can't have any sort of compromise. And I'd also say that the governor had better get involved in this, because I think everyone is disgusted. Perhaps everyone should just resign from the legislature until they unless they can agree on a budget by a fixed date, and then call for a new election.
Well, I saw in the on the wire that some are saying, I think it's some Republicans are saying, that Governor Doyle should cancel his trade mission to China so he can have input in this budget negotiation and crack the whip, so to speak.
I agree. He's the leader of the state. I think he's the governor, and I think he should be worried more about what we're doing here than the Chinese delegation going to Beijing or wherever they're going. 26% of the people in Milwaukee are living below the poverty line, according to the U.S. Census Bureau that came out recently. And we're talking about 142,000 people, lots of kids, people who don't have health insurance, people who don't have housing or decent schools. We can't plan our budgets for our schools or the university. Why? Because we don't have a budget. So, I mean, something has got to give here, and I would think that the governor should take the lead.
Well, I would basically agree with that point of view. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect the governor to either not go along with or cancel the trade mission to China. But I do think it's important for him to be here at this time. And I do think it's important for him to take a leadership role in trying to bring about some sort of budget agreement. And the governor is uniquely positioned to do that. I understand what's going on in both houses. I don't like it necessarily, but you've got Senate Democrats who crafted their own budget and they're positioning themselves for 2008. You've got the Assembly Republicans that crafted their own version and they're positioning themselves. That's the reality of what's going on in the budget process here. Everybody's positioning themselves for 2008.
But are we so different than Republicans and Democrats in California and Illinois and Iowa and South Dakota and North Dakota and Nebraska? I mean, what's happened here is just ridiculous. We're the only state in the union that does not have a budget, and yet these legislators show up and get $88 a day per diem for doing nothing.
As Common Cause pointed out in a press release a week ago, it's a national embarrassment. We are the laughing stock of the nation, I mean, in that regard. And it is sad, you know, and it's not the way that I remember politics in Wisconsin. I mean, there was a time when You know, people would fight it out. They'd have positions and things they wanted to push for and advocate. But in the end, people would sort of surrender to the will of the people and what's good for the state of Wisconsin. And there would be concessions made. And the governor would meet privately with members of the other party, take them out for dinner or whatever. You know, somehow it got done behind the scenes. But now it's become so partisan. We talked about that earlier in the show. So partisan, so ugly. So wedded to money and positioning themselves to help get more money, and the fundraising also, Ed, that's going on right now during the budget process, which I think is unseemly, and it's being done by both parties and the governor. I mean, I don't know how much worse this situation could get.
I don't either.
Now, I have heard, this is just speculation, that Republicans in the state legislature have more to gain from this being dragged out, because now they're a lot more sound bites, and they can be portraying the Democrats as the tax and spenders, and we're doing all we can to stop your taxes from going up. Does this help the Republicans by dragging this out, Rick Burr?
I don't really think it helps anybody, to be honest with you, Joy. I think everybody ends up looking bad. You know, as Ed pointed out and Common Cause has pointed out, Wisconsin is now the only state in the United States that does not have an approved budget in place. And I think that is an embarrassment for the state, and it says something about the sad state of our political process in Wisconsin. So I don't think there's a lot of glory for any party or the governor in this mess. I really don't.
I think it is part of the Bradley Foundation scheme, as it were, to continue to portray government as ineffectual and incompetent, and that we should privatize just about everything. I mean, we still have the Bradley Foundation front pushing for privatization of the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. So if they could also kill public radio and public television in the process, they'd be happy as mice.
But getting back to the Ellis Coles proposal, Ed, I mean, don't you think that's a reasonable thing?
And
wouldn't it be helpful if, for instance, the governor endorsed that idea? Don't you think that would help break?
I mean, if
the governor
right.
came out and said, you know, Mike Ellis and Rob Coles are right, we need to take the policy out of this, let's move everything else ahead so that local governments, et cetera, can start planning their budgets. Senate Democrats, I want you to get on board with this. Let's have a special session after we pass the budget. Let's hammer out all of these policy issues. Let's have hearings, debates, whatever. I mean, don't you think that would be helpful
if we endorsed
that idea?
Perhaps I should invite them all to Bobfest.
Well, you could get it settled at Bobfest maybe a lot. When is that coming up again, Ed?
September 8th.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot.
You know, Lauren said he hopes that we'll have a budget by Christmas. And, Rick, you joked this Christmas. Any guess? I mean, can this go how long?
Well, I think what you're going to see is that when we start getting into next week and we have no budget, I'm guessing that some of the editorial editors from around the state are going to start turning up the heat.
So are the lobbyists. I mean, the highway boys are not happy because they need more money. So I think the lobbyists are going to also be pressuring their own legislature.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to shame them.
I mean, they bought
them.
It for a reason.
They're going to try to shame them into getting something done fairly soon. My guess is that the pressure will continue to build throughout September. It could be the end of September or October before we have a budget, but there's ugliness to come. There's ugliness and pain to come. You watch.
Yeah, like what?
Well, I mean, it's going to drag out and drag out and drag out, and it's just going to look worse and worse and worse. And then people are going to really start to get upset. As Ed pointed out, and it's correct, you've got local units of government and school districts mm-hmm. that need to know how much money they're going to be getting. At this point, they don't. They won't know until we have a state budget, unless there's a separate appropriation for those funds.
It's entirely irresponsible.
Yeah. It is entirely irresponsible.
And I'm just going to point out that besides Laverne, who called because he cares about this issue this week, nobody else is online, you know, clamoring about. Does the general public care if we have the state budget or not?
I think they're disgusted at the moment, but I think that disgust is going to turn to anger, and when it does, I think the legislators are going to feel the pain, because people do want government to function. I mean, we expect them at a minimum to adopt a budget and to act responsibly.
Right.
They're not doing that now, and I think maybe part of it is that now some of us on television. And they're posturing for the cameras, but right. This is ridiculous.
Well, and it isn't like this was thrust upon them without notice. I mean, they've known that they had to come up with a biennial budget for a long time, and in most cases, it's done by July 1st.
What's the governor's number, 266-1212?
You know that by heart, huh?
People should call.
Is the biggest obstacle here this healthy Wisconsin universal health care plan that the Senate Democrats put in the budget, Ed Garvey?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it certainly gave people a distinct choice that we'll see in the next election, and the Republicans are turning it down. I think it's... for some reason, the extreme right is controlling the Republicans in the Assembly, and they just want to embarrass the Senate Democrats as well as Governor Doyle, and they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two big obstacles. One is the $15 billion health care proposal in the Senate version of the budget.
The governor supports it.
No, well, that is such a huge overhaul of health care in Wisconsin that needs to be debated on its own merits, not as part of the budget bill. And I think even the people that pushed it in the budget bill would concede that they wanted to get this out there for discussion purposes. But I think the other big stumbling block, as far as the Republicans in the Assembly are concerned, is they want some sort of indication as to how the governor intends to use his veto pen and whether or not he would abide by agreements that were reached in the conference committee, because there's a lot of concern that, even if we come to agreement amongst ourselves in the legislature, well, when this gets to the governor, if he's going to use his veto authority to totally recraft and undo those agreements, there's concern there. And so I think that's a big stumbling block, too. There's two, in my opinion. Those are the major ones.
We'll leave it there. And I want to thank the callers who did call in to say that they support public broadcasting and want the state budget to include funding for public broadcasting, which they just did. But we don't have time to put your call on the air. We're out of time because we have to say bye to Ed Garvey. Bye.
Peter Leidy will be singing Take Me Home, Carl Rove at Bob Fest.
On September 8th in Baraboo. And thanks a lot, Rick Berg.
Thanks, Joy.
Thank you, Joy.
Rick Berg, former appointee of the Thompson administration, Ed Garvey, a editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Thanks to both of them for being with us, and thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.